something. Do you have a sheet? Bela? Bela? That woman, Bela, I'm going to introduce this woman. Bela Rabbitson, I'd like you to meet my wife. That woman there. Rabbitson Hannah Flavor. We have two guests here this morning, and I'd like to welcome them. Rabbitson Leibowitz, the almona of Rabbi Hanoch Leibowitz, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. I'm humbled that she comes here to Gold Shear in the Israel Center, and she came with her sister, Mrs. Paulson, who lives a block away from me. And I know, and I never met him, you know, never met her. Fact is, I'm happy that I know all the people in my building. Wait a minute, I don't know them all. There are so many people. It's a very big place, Hanov, and there are a lot of great people in Hanov. But anyway, welcome to the shiur.
This is the gold standard shiur.
What, did I do something wrong? Oh, that's right, that was very important. I turned off my cell phone. Did you?
Yes.
How's that? Is that? Yeah? Uncle Sam wants you to turn off your cell phones.
Uncle Sam.
They make me crazy. Anyway, we have a great deal to do here this morning. And my original intention, as I had said at the end of last week's shiur, was that we were going to pick up from where we left off last week, and we're going to do that today. But I had a little bit of an introduction that just, you know, sometimes I'm overwhelmed by certain feelings and certain ideas, and I feel that I have to share them with you, because you are my mishpucha, and you have to know what's going on in my kishkat, especially when I think it's a means of demonstrating that the Torah is eternal, the Torah is constantly relevant, the Torah in advance saw everything that was going to happen until today and beyond with such clarity. It blows the mind. So here we go. On the first page, there are going to be three citations. One is going to be from Parshas Toldot, last week. On the second side, there are going to be two other citations also from Parshas Toldot. And then the third one is going to be from Parshas Vayetze, this week's center. I have not forgotten that this week is Vayetze. Let's read Parshas Toldot. Yitzchak is living someplace near Gror in the land of Plishtim, the area of Aza. We know the area well, and he planted that year, and there was great blessing. The man grew greater and greater, until he had become very great. We're talking in terms of the expanse of what belonged to him. There's Boshet Abirchat Hashem, God's blessing, coming down upon Yitzchak. He had all sorts of sheep and cattle and many servants. And the Plishtim, they were jealous of him. The same old story, you understand. It started 4,000 years ago. V'chol ha'be'ibot asher chofru avi aviv, and all of the wells that the servants of his father had dug, b'mei Avram aviv, in the days of his father Avram, sitmum Plishtim, the Plishtim stopped up the wells. But not only stop them up, Vayimalum afar, they made sure to fill it up with earth. We're talking, of course, about a land that needs water desperately. Everybody needs water. You have to be motivated by hatred to go ahead and not simply close them up. Everybody could use it. No. Close them up, fill them with earth. You know, one of the many things that they want to do is they want to make certain that there will be no zecher of the fact that Avraham ever lived here. Here comes, for the first time in history, the denial of the existence of the Jewish people. Avraham never lived here. Wells? What wells? Where wells? There are no wells. I say we are living in the period of Churban Bayit Sheni. So you're going to look at me, what do you mean with living at the time of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash that took place 2,000 years ago? No, it didn't take place 2,000 years ago. It began 2,000 years ago. All the digging, the tens of thousands of tons of earth that have been removed from the Har HaBayit is in order to erase and eradicate completely any zecher that there was ever a Jewish presence on Har HaBayit. The most egregious, I think that's the right word, and if it's not, it sounds good anyway. The most egregious highway robbery on the face of this earth. It's this! And of course, in the last 2-3 weeks, they have taken far. The steps now are what? Kever Rachel, the Mama Rachel, why are you giving me stories, Kever Rachel? It's Sheikh Ibrahim ibn Bila Vesech was. They want to erase every connection between Jews and this land. That's why, of course, they will never be able to recognize Israel as the state of the Jewish people when there's no such thing. By the way, they're selling it to the world. It's not a galachta. They're selling it to the world. We never belonged here. We don't belong here. It's not ours. It's unbelievable. So if you want to know, in a sense, is this a new phenomenon that has appeared on the scene of world history? It's not a new phenomenon. All of the wells that Avraham had dug were closed up, stopped up, filled with earth, covered over. There should be no trace whatsoever that Avraham Avinu was ever there. And then, Pasuk goes on, Vayomer Avimelech Yitzchak, Avimelech said to Yitzchak, here of course comes the first classic statement of anti-Semitism. Avimelech says to Yitzchak, Lech me'imanu, go from here, Yudin Raus, ki otzamto mimenu mi'od, because you have become very great mimenu, from us. Your wealth is from us. You robbed us blind. Classic anti-Semitism, you understand? The banks, the insurance company, the media, it's all Jewish. Leich me'imanu, go from us, kiyok, sanctomi menu miyo, from us, got all that wealth, from us. Classic statement of anti-Semitism. Manish, it sounds like Avimelech is saying right here, today. Vayelech Mishom Yitzchak went from there by Yicham Benachal Gror, and he settled in the valley of Gror, and he lived there. And Yitzchak went and he started digging the wells again. Vayachbor Beidot Hamayim, he dug the wells of water, Asher Chofru Mimei Avraham Oved. He starts redigging those same wells, the ones that they had dug in the days of his father Avraham. Vayisatmum Plishtim, that the Plishtim had closed up. Acharei Mos Avraham, after the death of Avraham. Vayikrolahem shemot, and he had called them names. But you know why all of this is necessary? You know, we're in the middle of a period in which we're dealing with the Ktav HaKabbalah, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, the one who wrote the Ktav HaKabbalah. You'll know all about him before this year is over. He says there was something very important about those wells. Those wells that Avraham had dug. Vayikra lohen shemot, and he called them names. He gave names to each one of the wells. Because you know what Avraham did in his lifetime? Wherever he came, he made a mizbeach, or he dug a well, and he gave the well a name. The name of the well always reflected the existence of a one God. I don't know what he called them. Be'er Hashem, Ma'ayan Elokim, wherever he went, because he wanted that it should become part of the common talk of people. God, God, God. Avraham Avinu was a master teacher. When they close up the wells, not only do they want to make certain that there is no zecher whatsoever of Avraham Avinu, they don't want his message. They don't want his religion. They don't want his morality. They don't want his ethics. Those wells that he had dug and gave them names, pushed him, closed it up. And you know what? You know what Yitzchak did? Vayikru lahem shemot kashemot asher karo lahem aviv. Tzilahachis. This guy Yitzchak comes along and he starts giving them the same names that his father had given. He's going to pick up exactly from where his father left off, and he is now going to be the one who is going to proclaim the name of God. You know, sometimes I've heard already enough drushes, and I don't know if I ever said such drushes. I hope I didn't. That, you know, Yitzchak seems to be the quiet one of whom Yitzchak digs bells, Yitzchak plants. I mean, but what's so exciting about Yitzchak? Yitzchak was awesome. The defiance against his whole society by re-digging the wells. The act of defiance by giving those wells the same names that Avraham Avinu had given them. You think this is a simple task? Surrounded by people on all sides who want to obliterate, erase, eradicate, destroy the wells and the names and the memory of Avraham Avinu. This is courage. This is determination. This is one of the others. This is Yitzchak, a worthy son to Avraham, and an even worthier father of a Yaakov. And he dug the wells of water. Okay, I said that passing. The servants of Yitzchak dug in the Nachal, and they found water, fresh water. Do you know what's happening in this pasuk? Now, Yitzchak, having already redug the wells of Avraham and giving them the names that Avraham had given them, he's now taking the next step further. Each generation has to add to the knowledge and the wealth of Yaakov. He goes the next step. He's now going to be digging his own wells. He's going to be leaving his own heritage and his own mark. And here, this is modern history. The shepherds of Gror contended with the shepherds of Yitzchak Lamar, saying the same thing you hear every day. Lanu Hamayim, the water is ours, the land is ours, Yerushalayim is ours, Haradayit is ours, Kever Rachel now is ours, Maras HaMachpela is ours, Kever Yosef, they took over who knows how long ago already. Everything, Lanu, everything is ours. He called the name of the Be'er Esek ki hit askumra, because they contended with him. So he doesn't give up, you understand? So what? They fight about one bear, he's going to dig another bear. And he's going to keep digging. And by the way, that's exactly what Klal Yisrael did. They wanted to do us in, and we're still around. We keep going. We keep digging, we keep building, we keep growing. Nothing stops us. They dug another well. And about that there was also contention. Sitna. Called the name of the play, he called it Sitna. You see, Yitzchak was smart. It didn't take Yitzchak too much time to find out that what fuels all of this contention is plain, naked hatred. You know, there may have been others under certain circumstances who would have said, you know, they may have a claim, they may have rights, they have nationhood, they have peoplehood, they have hearing, they have hair, they're here. Yitzchak arrives at a conclusion what the bottom line is. Mahatnish mit vehemence against and tish. There's nobody to sit down and talk with. There is nobody to negotiate with, because what's fueling them is plain sitna, hatred. That's a great accomplishment, to arrive at an understanding that we are dealing and confronting people who despise us. That means an ability to see, clarity of vision. The most important, I'd say the most important quality that is necessary for the survival and the thriving of Jewish life here is clarity of vision. The cup and the eyes have to see clearly. Not to let yourself become tzedreit by all the tzedreis. And there are a lot of tzedreita people around. But you know, you come here for clarity of vision. That's what happens over here. Then it says, Vayatek Misham, he moved from there, Vayachta Ber Acheret, he dug another well, and there was no, they didn't contend anymore. Vayikra Shmo Rechovot, he called the name of the place Rechovot, Hayomah, he said, Kiyato, now here for Hashem Lanu, Ufarim Ubaretz, now we're going to spread out and learn. Of course, there are midrashim that say that the first Asik, the first Be'er represents the first Bet HaMikdash, the second Be'er represents the second Bet HaMikdash. The third one, that's our period of time, is going to end with Ata Hirchev Hashem Lanu Ufadinu Baretz. We may not see it right now, but it is, it's coming. There's a God Almighty, I'm telling you, He never sleeps, nor does he slumber. The Rebbeinu Shem is wide awake. I can't help it. This is one of those mornings, understand? We're not guilty about it. But on the first page of the Jerusalem Post, they say there was an agreement 6 years ago, between Olmert and Abbas, to give them half of Yerushalayim, to give them the whole West Bank. The holy places in Yerushalayim should be under the a group of elders, and the deal was ready to be done.
They didn't want it.
And Rebbeinu Shem enters the picture. Olmert's indicted. And Abba says, I can't make a deal with a crook like that. The Rebbeinu Shem does it. We didn't even notice that he saved us the day that they brought charges against Olmert. We thought that, listen, this former mayor of ours who betrayed us. We fought for him to become mayor. We campaigned for him, all of our parents. And he turned around. Okay, but we're learning Torah. Just one, learning Torah. Anybody who denies that what I'm teaching you is Torah has a problem, is lacking in clarity of vision. Let's go to the other side. Last week we were learning the brachas. the parasha of Yitzchak, Rivka, Yaakov, and Esav. So we concentrated, and we're going to go back to it. We were concentrating on what was Rivka doing, what was Yaakov doing, and I say we're going to get back to that in a few moments. But we didn't get to the point of what is Esau's response. So here it is. Vayikishmoa Esau, number two. When Esau heard the words of his father, Vayitzak tzo'oko gedolo umoto, when he finds out from his father that somebody had been here already and took the brachas, he cried out with a great bitter cry, Vayomer le'aviv, and he said to his father, Tata Laban, Barcheni Gaoni Avi, Father, give me a blessing too. Vayomer, Yitzchak said, Borachicha b'mirma, Vayikach birchatecha, Borachicha b'mirma, your brother came with cleverness, and he took your bracha. Targum Onkelos says, your brother came b'chuchmesa, with wisdom. He does not translate it as deceit. Because you have to understand, and this we may get to as well, deceit is not always deceit. Like a lie is not always a lie. What happens if I save somebody's life with a lie? Is that lie a lie, or is that lie truth? That lie is absolute truth. What happens if you deceive a guy out of causing pain to a fellow Jew? Is that deceit? Or is that chokmah? That's wisdom. Everything has to be judged according to the circumstances. There is no such thing as saying a lie is a lie is a lie. I'm ready to agree that a rose is a rose is a rose. But as far as a lie is concerned, you have to know who's saying the lie, under what circumstances of a lie is the lie being said. Deceit. Who's deceiving who? Baruch Hashem, we have agents around the world. Secret agents around the world that are deceiving their kishkis out of Goyim over there. All in order to protect our lives and the lives of our people. Deceit? Nobody can come along and say it's absolutely evil. Oh boy, what a big mitzvah deceit can be.
Why didn't they use the word chokma here instead of mirma? Mirma has a different kind of thing.
So therefore we're changed. It's a good question you're asking. You know what? I have my own feeling about that. I think that Yitzchak is using that word mirma in order to say, you know, there's a twinkle in his eye. I thought that this Yaakov is Ishtom. He's a naive guy. He's not going to make his way in a dog-eat-dog world. But you know what I see now? Yaakov is capable of mirma when it is necessary. You know what I just now decided? That is the pshat. I had once said, says, Yitzchak feels Yaakov, and he's hairy. And then he says, Hakol, Kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands are the hands of Esau. And the next pasuk says, he blessed him. Wait a minute. What do you mean you're blessing him? You just say you're not sure who he is. You say the voice is the voice of Yaakov and the hands are the hands of Esau. So I once said, you know what the pshat is? You know why Yitzchak wants this is, you know, not bad, I like it. I like it very much. Yitzchak wanted to give the brachos to Esau because he knows Esau is going to be able to take care of himself. He's going to be able to defend him. He's a tough guy, and it's a tough world. And only serious and tough people are able to make it. Yaakov is a medical sitting over there in the tent, bent by the weight of centuries over a Gemara. He won't be able to fend for himself. And then all of a sudden, you know what he notices? What a mistake I made. This same fellow, whose voice is the voice of Yaakov, when necessary, he can have the hands of Esau. when he has to stand up and defend himself, he can put together 3 years after the Holocaust an army that is able to withstand 7 invading armies. This is a chevreman who's going to make it. So therefore he says, this is exactly what I was looking for. I wanted somebody who has the voice of Yaakov, the voice of Torah, Adinut, Edelkeit, Gutzkeit, but who's also able to be tough. And you're dying the days of. And you know what I just not got? That's exactly the fellow who's in here. Has that mixture that I wanted. So when he uses the word Mirma, Ba'chicha b'Mirma, Yitzchak has a satanic little smile and a twinkle in his eyes. I made a mistake. I thought this fellow Yankovay, say, he'll know how to make his way through Shas, but through life, history is a tough and tumble place. He came to Nirma. He came with a holy deceit in order to receive the brachas. Yes?
The only problem is that Yitzchak seems to think that Yaakov came on his own. His mother really...
Yitzchak seems to think what?
That Yaakov came, I mean, if that's a very interesting interpretation, you know, but it sounds as if with that interpretation that Yitzchak feels that, you know, whoever came here, you know, came on his own coming, and really Rivka kind of pushed him in. It was not Yaakov, would not have gone in if his mother didn't push him.
I'm going to ask you to wait until we go further. And there's also a lot that we said last week that has to do with what you asked. One of the things that we did last week that we're going to continue now is everybody in this parasha of the brachas is acting l'shem shamayim with tzidkus, with honesty. We're going to see the Ksav HaKabbalah is going to say simple thing. A blind man is getting ready to cross the street, and he doesn't know that the car is going to come and kill him. You take him by the hand. Did you do a good act? Is that a good act? That's a very good act. That's a very good act. Yitzchak wants to give the brachas to somebody who doesn't deserve them. Are you doing him the biggest favor in the world? Especially Rivka. Rivka was told by God that Yaakov is going to be the father of the Jewish people. She knows divinely that Esav is a Rosh HaMagosha. You know what they're doing? They're saving a man from making a very big mistake. And you know what saving a person from making a big mistake is? That's a big mitzvah. Okay, these shiurim become exhausting adventures.
Oh my God! He cried a marah though when he realized what happened.
That's I'm describing what?
Yaakov cried out.
Yosef cried out. Esav just cried out. The pasuk here says that Esav cried a bitter cry.
But a little bit later on,
yeah,
Yaakov cries out when he realizes what happened. Is that not?
No. I'm sorry. Okay. Vayomer, listen to this. What is Esav's response? Hachikoro Shemo Yaakov? Now we know, you know, why he called his... is it because his name was called Yaakov that he outwitted me these 2 times? Ve'yakveni zeh pamayim? As b'chorati lokach, he took my birthright. Took? Is that the correct word? Or is this man an absolute liar? He's a liar. You sold it fair and square. You want to get rid of it. You wanted nothing to do with it. The yesod of all, the approach of all Goyim to Jews is lies, lies, and lies. We read it every day in the papers. From the United Nations to UNESCO to Abbas, all the hilarious lies. As Bechorati Lakach, he took it. He took it. At Bechorati Macharti, I sold it because I didn't want to have anything to do with it. Vineyata now, Lakach Birchati, he took my bracha. What do you mean he took your bracha? The bracha was supposed to go to the one who has the Bechorah rights. You sold them, you rejected them. Yeah. You want nothing to do with him. You want nothing to do with the house of Avram and Yitzchak. You rejected them all. Third, Parshas Vayetze. The end of this week's Seder is most probably the most unusual of them all. The most unusual of them all. If you want a story of Jewish history, if you want a story of Jewish history and mamish until today, well, what's today? What do I write over here? What do I write over here? Oh, it's Beis Kislev, second day of Kislev, 9/11. 9/11. Okay? Look what happens over here. Yaakov, if the 20, you're so slow. Yaakov has spent 20 years in the house of Lavan. We're going to get a description of those years. Yeah. They weren't very pleasant years. They were very, very difficult years. Yeah. But you know what? You can never really call even periods of suffering and difficulty. We're going to see how much he suffered in the house of Lavan. But Lavan never lose sight of the fact that he left the house of Lavan with 11 out of 12 Shvatim already born. In other words, with all of the suffering in the house of Lavan, boy, the house of Israel is being built. The only thing that the house of Israel needs yet is to wait for next week's Seder, when the last of the 12 Shvatim Binyamin is born in Eretz Yisrael. One has to be born in Eretz Yisrael. Yes?
I just want to comment this. He said, Beis Lavan. What does Beis Lavan mean in English?
What?
Beis Lavan. What does it mean?
Beis Lavan, the house of Lavan.
No, it's literally, literally.
The White House. Very good. Beis Lavan. All right? You get the... Give that man something or other. You know, if you guys are so sharp, I take credit for it all, you know. I know, you know, now we have to watch, you know, that we don't get into ethnic and racist jokes like how white it is in that White House, you understand. Not everything is white. Lavan has gone off to shear his sheep. Yaakov, you understand, Yaakov finds this as the opportune moment to flee on Cloyfin from the house of Lavan. Obviously, he has to flee because it's not easy to confront his father-in-law. I imagine every shver is difficult to, except the tables are turned over here. The shver is not the one who's supporting the Edom. The Edom is the one, the son-in-law is the one who turned the shver into a mighty and wealthy man. And he even says it. He can't, has no choice. He says, Nichashti, earlier in Parshat Vayetze, he says, I looked through sorcery and I found out God blessed me because of you. You understand the grace of Chukhan? He needs sorcery and black magic to find out that all of the wealth and abundance in his house is because of Yaakov. can't open his eyes and take a look and see what's happened since Yaakov and why it happened, and we'll see right away why. But you know, that's the way it is. He also suffered with some absolutely blurred, murky vision. He can't see straight. So finally he flees. Word gets to Lavan that Yaakov has flown the coop with his wives and his children. So Lavan begins to ride hard across the mountaintops of Mesopotamia. And on the seventh day, he catches up with Yaakov. And then comes the great confrontation between Yaakov and Lavan. And if you stole my daughters, you stole my daughters, why did you have to steal my gods, my deities? Yaakov says, we didn't take anything of yours, because he didn't know that Rachel was the one who had stolen them. He looks for it, he doesn't find it, and then finally, he sought, number three, he didn't find the idols. And then, Vayichal Yaakov. You have to imagine over here, here is a Yaakov who for 20 years, there's been a buildup of anger and resentment. For 20 years, he was able to remain the Ishtam Yoshev at home, and now all of a sudden, it all breaks out. Vayichal Yaakov. Yaakov got very angry, Vayorev Belavan, and he intended, spoke up to Lavan. Vayan Yaakov, Vayomer Lavan, Yaakov said to Lavan. This sounds real great, but it's one of the greatest speeches in literature, by the way. You have to appreciate what's happening here. Napishiyu machatosi, kidolakta acharai. What is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? You rummaged through all of my things. What did you see from all of the kelim in my house? What did you see over here? What did I eat? What did I take from you? Mikol klei beisecha. Sinko neged achai ve'achecha. Place it here before my brothers and your brothers, the mishpucha. V'yochichu ben shneni. Prove, what did I take? Ze'esim shona anochi imalcham, 20 years with you. Your rams and your goats, your ewes and your goats, none of them lost their young. I didn't eat any of your sheep. I never brought to you that which was mangled. I would bear the loss. Miyodi to Bakshena, from my hand you will take it. Gnuvit to Yom, Gnuvit to Laila, anything that was stolen by day or by night. I carried all of that loss. Hayishi by Yom, during the day I was eaten up by the heat of the day, the Kerach by Laila, the cold at night. Batidet Shinasi Meina, didn't sleep for 20 years because I was taking care of your Shad Salah. Zelias, Mishonu Veisecha, 20 years I'm in your house. Avaditicha Abes, Mishoni. I worked for you 14 years for your two daughters, the Sheikh Shonin, and the last 6 years were Bitsonecha for your sheep. Excuse me, I said it, Monim, and you changed the contract, the deal, the salary, 10 Monim. Rashi says a Monet is 10. 100 times you changed Manas Godet. If not for the fact that the God of my father, the God of Avram, and the God of Yitzhak were with me, you would have sent me out of your house empty-handed. My suffering and my all of my efforts, the efforts of my hands, God saw, and he made it clear to you. He told you, don't touch a hair. This is one of the greatest speeches of the exploited of all time. You can hear people coming out of the sweatshops of the East Side. You can hear them coming out of the gulags and the communes in Russia. Day and night I suffered, I strove, I worked. What did I get? it's great, you know. I think that anybody who would hear a speech like this coming from Yaakov would be impressed, would be moved, would be moved to tears. Maybe they'd have to take out a little, wipe away a tear or a... Right. Listen to the answer of Lavan, and this is why I'm learning the whole thing. Just you should hear his... Vayam Lavan, Vayam Yaakov, Lavan said, and he answered and he said to Yaakov, Habanos Benosai, the daughters are my daughters. Habanu Bonai, the sons are my sons. Hatzon Tzoni, the sheep are my sheep. The Chol Asher At Hadro Elihu, everything is here, it's mine. It's mine. It's mine. Harapayit, Kever Rachel, Maras Hapela, Kever Yosef, Yehuda, Shamram, Tel Aviv, Haifa. It's all mine. It's all mine. I always wondered, I never really had an answer for it, but I think I have an answer for it now. What does it say in the Haggadah? It say ulamad. Ma bikesh lavan ha'adami lasos. Go out and learn. What was it that Lavan Arami wanted to do? Shaparo lo gozer el al azachorim. Paro only decreed against the males. But Lavan bikesh lakor esakol. He wanted to uproot everything. What does it mean? He wanted to take Yaakov and his family into concentration camps and gas them all. What did he want to do? What did Lavan want to do? What did he want to do? You know what he wanted to do? Today I understand what the Haggadah was talking about. He wanted to erase Jewish identity. A Jewish democratic state in Eretz Yisrael? No, we will never agree to recognize anything of the sort. A Jewish this or a Jewish that? He wants to erase. He wants to cover up, close up all of the wells. He wants to remove Jewish identity from the face of this earth. He doesn't have to kill anybody. Erase. Deny. Reject. Lie. The world loves lies. There was an article last week in the in Haaretz by Moshe Arends. The article was that the whole Arab narrative of the struggle here and everything that happened is all a lie. You have to see the responses that came in. Hatokbekim. You know what Tokbekim are? Okay. What are you talking about? Hey, enough eating over there. What are you talking about? They were here first. It belongs to them. In here. Lavan bikesh lakor, Jewish identity. From everything. No zecha. And he's going to keep telling everybody, habonim bonai, v'habonas benosai, everything you have is mine, mine, mine. There is nothing that carries any kind of specific, unique Jewish identity. There's no such thing. That's what he wanted to do. That's how he is going to erase the memory of anything Jewish. They're still trying to do it. They don't give up. It's unbelievable. The satanic forces of the world never give up. Because hatred is a very powerful emotion. I haven't started the shiur yet today. This was just an add-on. Yes.
When is that pasuk going to ever take place? V'nivruchu b'chol kol ha'amim.
V'nivruchu kol mishpachot ha'adamah was in Parashat Lech Lecha. God said that to Avram. Lech Lecha me'atzro me'lavro me'ivra. Da'yei bracha. By the way, side by side with all of this denial and rejection of Jewish identity, you'll also find sprinkled here and there an article about another major medical breakthrough in Machon Weizmann and another technological breakthrough somewhere else. It's unbelievable. The world is very, very much dependent. We said, I think we mentioned Leslie 2 weeks ago, the only terrible thing Israel did, without Israeli technology, there wouldn't be cell phones in the world. Now, a cell phone is most probably Makar Shalok Suva Bar Tova, you understand? I tell you, God must watch everybody with a cell phone. They have a talk of brothers. Just coming here this morning from Harnov, the number of people that cross the streets where they shouldn't cross, talking on the phone, not looking either way where the cars are going. It's unbelievable. God marches with the cell phone people. He's going to get tired. He's going to get tired. That's the story. Lo ambigish lakar zakol. If you want to know what it means, lakar zakol, simply to erase every trace of Jewish identity. Or this has anything to do with Jews. It's not Jews, it's Muslim. It's Muslim. And if it's not Muslim, it's Christian. By the way, the Christians have done this all over the country. They have done this still a hate all over the country. What always troubles me is that the church had brains so many years ago to start lining up places all over Eretz Yisrael. Nitzer Gleuben, we're sitting now on church property, right down over here. Most of Rechavia is on church property. They bought up. Right? That was the introduction. Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. I'm going to read a little bit of a biography. I mean, you can Google Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. I have a number of copies. I'll leave them in the back, and if you want to take it. Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg was born in 1785 in Lisa, in the province of Posen in Germany. 1785. 9 years. 9 years after America came into being. America was 1776. Understand? Don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes. Give me liberty or give me death. I regret that I have but one thing to give them for my life. Okay. My country, right or wrong. All right. The city was renowned. The city of Lisa was known as a center of Torah scholarship as well for its great rabbanim. Says the father of Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, Rabbi Gamliel was a nurse, a male nurse. How do you like that? It seems that Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi began his education in the city of his birth by studying Torah with the local Rav. The Rav was a good friend of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger was one of the giants. Now we're talking one of the giants of the 18th century. We know little about the childhood of Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi. There's one thing, however, that we do know, which is that he was extremely diligent and almost never stopped studying Torah. All these stories of Gedolim frustrate the kishkis out of me, I understand. At least here they don't go, you know, that he was already knew Shas at 5 and was writing Chidushei Torah at 6 and a half. And I read these things and I think, like, when will we ever? But we've had great people. We had very, very, and we still have some great people. Even though Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi was great in Torah and very learned in Hebrew, he didn't want to become a rabbi. He went into business, and he did quite well in business. You know? Not that I like these kind of people. But what happened was he was very successful, and then his business deteriorated, and he was forced to take a position. You guessed it, as a rabbi. But he was able to take this great failure in life with a degree of equanimity. He decided that if this is what happened, then most probably the Rabbeinu Shalom wants me to be a rav. And thank God his business deteriorated and he became a rav. Because he was able to write a sefer that is a legacy for all time. The Ksav HaKabbalah was written because he found himself in the forefront against the Haskalah, the Enlightenment, the Reform Movement, those who were really attempting to empty Torah of its sanctity. And he stood up to defend Torah. And really he does a masterful job in this Sefer Ktav HaKabbalah. Because one of the things that's true until today, the Reform and the Conservative Movement do not believe that Torah shed ba'al peh, the oral law, was given at Sinai. What was given at Sinai was Chamisha Kumshi Torah. And then the rabbis are the ones that created this so-called oral law. Well, if they were rabbis, then we're rabbis. What they said, we can undo. But no, we believe Be'emuna Shlema. Chamam says it clearly. That the oral law was given at Sinai together with the written law. Torah Shebiktav and Torah Shebalpeh were given together. And it's so simple to prove it because there are so many places where Torah Shebiktav is simply impossible to understand without the elaboration of Torah Shebalpeh. And then said Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain. And he told the people, and I should put the tefillin on your arm and tefillin on your head. That's what the Torah says. What do they look like? What's supposed to do there? What do you do there? You think Moshe Rabbeinu didn't tell him every last detail? All of the explanation of Torah. That was the Torah Shabbat Peh that Moshe gave to the people orally. And it was transmitted orally until Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi in the year 200 wrote the Mishnah, because things had reached a point where Jews were no longer able to transmit it all verbally and orally from Rebbe to Talmud, so it was written. But that Torah Sheba'al Peh, the Talmud and Torah are inextricably intertwined. So he wrote a sefer called Haktav, the Ktav, the written Torah, and the Kabbalah. Kabbalah here does not mean what is commonly passes for. We're not talking about mysticism. We're talking about Moshe Kibel Torah Mi Sinai. Moshe received Torah in Sinai and gave it to Yeshua, and the Torah that was transmitted orally throughout the generations. The Ktav is the Torah Shebichtav, the written law. Kabbalah is the Mesorah of Torah Shabbat, how we are supposed to understand Torah. What he wanted to demonstrate, and did masterfully, is the Ktav and the Kabbalah are one. There are no two Torahs, a Torah Shabbat Ktav and a Torah Shabbat Alpeh. They are both one. There are two others who did masterful jobs of this sort, following Reb Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. The first was the Malbim. The Malbim was already toward the end of the 19th century. His parish, where he wrote a parish on all of Tanakh, his parish on Torah is called HaTorah VaMitzvot. The Torah and the Mitzvot, they're all the same. They're all one. And then, of course, another great classic, Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima Chumash has the words of our rabbis beneath the text of the Chumash, in order to demonstrate that there's an absolute unity between the two. There are no two Torahs. There's all one Torah. And the covenant that we entered into with the Rabbeinu Shem at Sinai was on Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebalpeh. And the first one to do that job was Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. And the Mele, he wrote an awesome parish. And I don't think that, you know, I'm going to make you experts over here. I'm even dreaming, if I finally get out of Parshas Toldos, to take you through the story of Yosef and his brothers. Also one of the parshas that is misunderstood. Everybody reads into those parshas whatever floats their boat, you understand? Everybody gets up there and has knock up shot, and they dismember the shvatim limb from limb, and they, what they do, a churban that they do with Yosef HaTzadik, it's a gefelach. What else do we have? During those difficult times, the difficult times he's talking about is the onslaught against Torah that was begun by the so-called intellectuals. Achen vei, you know my opinion of the intellectuals. They are the bane of Klal Yisrael. The most bemuddled and befuddled people around. They can't read a pasuk straight. Certainly can't trust them with politics. Did I misjudge today's shiur? One page that was supposed to be a 10-15 minute introduction. Anyway, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi placed himself in the first wave of those fighting the assimilationists and the reformers, calling upon people with fiery words to be vigilant and defend the holiness of Israel and the Torah Shabbat Palpeh and the Torah Shabbat Bechtav. He was very determined, and since all Jewish tradition was sacred in his eyes, he defended it with all his strength. Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi said, I would normally not attend a wedding unless he knew that the young couple would conduct themselves in accordance with Torah laws. One day an important man who had become distant from Judaism invited the Rav to officiate at the marriage of his daughter. Knowing that the young couple did not observe the halacha, the Rav refused. However, the man, who was very influential, went to the authorities and obtained an order. The Rav must officiate at the wedding. Constrained and forced to comply, the Rav officiated at the wedding, yet instead of saying, duly married, according to the law of Moses in Israel, he cried out in a loud voice, according to the law of Frederick the Great. That was his act. That was his act of defiance. Then he wrote his great commentary, and not more, but what's most important, this is also not so popular today, but it should be. He wrote a Perush, a commentary on the Siddur called Iyun Tefillah, and his profound insights into words, the meaning of words. Words were treasures, precious. You have to understand words. He used that in his commentary on Tefillah. Maybe if you'll be good, I'll give you some examples of that too. All right. Anyway, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg was the Rav of Konigsberg for 34 years. Following a short illness, he died at 2 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, the 10th of Nisan, 1865. He was 80 years old. Before his death, he ordered that no eulogies be given at his funeral. In his will, he expressed his desire that his commentary be read in public 3 times a week after the Torah reading during the first 30 days of mourning that followed his funeral. We are, how long is it from 1865 to now? That's about 145 years on, it's all over. So we are going to be learning. We learned last week the Tzavah Kabbalah, everything that I have in the next page is going to wait. Next week, we have a lot to learn. We all have a good week. Dr. Goldblum is here, so I get scared.